Aloha, folks. You're listening to Inside the Desert Oasis Room, episode number 78. This episode is sponsored by Tandawai Rum. Since 1854, Tandawai Distillers has been producing quality rum from the Philippines. The indisputable history of their Philippine rum is the foundation of which the Tandawai legacy continues today. Tandawai Asian Rum is made with premium varieties of heirloom sugarcane grown in the Visayas region of the tropical island of the Philippines. It is the same Southeast Asian vintage canes that has been cultivated for centuries in the tropical maritime climate and rich Philippine soil, which makes Tandawai Asian Rum distinctly Filipino. Tandawai Rum also has lots of history in the tropical exotic cocktail era when it first began with Don the Beachcomber and his Filipino barmen in the 1930s. There's evidence that these legendary bartenders created some of the first tropical cocktail recipes using Tandawai Rum. For more information, go to TandawaiUSA.com or stop by Tandawai USA's Facebook page. This podcast is also sponsored by the Tonga Hut. Opened in 1958, the Tonga Hut in North Hollywood is LA's oldest continuously run tiki bar. With locations in both North Hollywood and Palm Springs, California, the Tonga Hut serves classic tiki cocktails in a classic tiki setting. Dine in a secret tiki hideaway or learn about rum and rum history at one of their educational seminars. And if you're up to the challenge, take the journey to join the Loyal Order of Drooling Bastards. For information on events, Rum Club, and more, go to TongaHut.com or find them on Facebook or Instagram. On this episode, we chat with Jonathan M. Chaffin of Horror in Clay. Jonathan's vision is influenced by horror-inspired stories like those of H.P. Lovecraft, so naturally, his designs are a unique mashup of tiki, horror, and fantasy. He even goes the extra mile of creating collectible sets for each mug theme, and we talk about how all of this permeated his life and started a passion project that continues today. As always, I hope you enjoy listening to this episode as much as we did bringing it to you. If you enjoyed this episode, I'd like to invite you to subscribe to the podcast. It's free and it will make it easier for you to follow our adventures. Shares on your social media pages are always appreciated. And if you'd like to support the show, please stop by DesertOasisRoom.com and click on the donate button. Every donation, no matter the size, helps keep this podcast coming to you every week. Okay, without further ado, here he is, Mr. Jonathan M. Chaffin.
Hello,
Jonathan.
Hey, Adrian.
How's it going?
It's going pretty good.
I appreciate you joining the podcast. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you for having me.
I'm excited to talk to you. I appreciate that you had chosen to become a sponsor on the show. Thank you for that. I appreciate the support.
Oh, no problem. I really enjoy it. I started listening to it. I listen to a lot of podcasts because in Atlanta we drive a lot. So.
Okay, so you were in Atlanta.
Yeah.
Okay. I was going to ask you next what part of the country you're in, because I know that you're in the East Coast, and I apologize that I'm calling you at this hour. I know it's probably past 10 o'clock where you are, right? Or about 10 o'clock.
It's about that.
And I empathize with you because I recorded a couple months ago with our friends in Hawaii with Tiki Rob and Beach Bums, Tiki Pop. And
oh, cool.
They are 3 hours behind me. So I was talking to them at around midnight because, you know, we talked at around 8:30 their time. And
yep.
They wanted to do it after dinner and all that stuff with their family. So I was up pretty late and it was a tough one. But it was tough because I was just getting over a cold. Actually, I was fighting a cold. So I wasn't even just getting over it. I was fighting a cold. So nothing on them. It was just that I was struggling a little bit because of that, you know.
Sure. It actually works out for me because I already put our little one to bed.
Oh, okay.
That's actually funny you mentioned that because I worked on a project with Tiki Rob. He was doing some glazes for some of my mugs. And so we had the same conversation, except it was a 6-hour difference.
6 hours. Yeah. Wow, that's crazy. Well, that's pretty cool that you guys have collaborated.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, he does gorgeous works.
He does, doesn't he?
Yep.
So, let's talk about the mug stuff, because you have a different approach to your mug making.
I mean, I was a tiki collector long before I was anything else. Once upon a time, I decided to design a mug and coasters and, you know, collateral for my own bar in my house, in my new house, and came up with a design. And at the same time, a friend of mine that was a burner, like Burning Man sort of events, was launching a Kickstarter for one of her projects and had me do the graphics for her and do some of her rewards and collateral. So I was aware of how Kickstarter worked.
So that's something actually I wanted to talk to you about as well, but we'll get to that. Sure. I want to start, though, with the style of mug that you do, because you come from a different kind of influence, it looks like.
Sure.
So tell me about that.
I mean, it's a pretty natural outgrowth. I'm a graphic designer, okay. So I collect a bunch of stuff.
Okay.
I really haven't ever met a graphic designer who doesn't.
Right.
And two of the principal things that I collect are horror movie props and tiki mugs.
Okay.
So when I moved, I got a place, I got my first basement. My basement was full of basically haunt props and tiki mugs.
Okay, cool.
So there's kind of a natural flow. I've done some prop making for different movies and haunted houses. I love haunted houses. And so,
and these haunted houses, are they like for amusement parks or are they seasonal projects?
Yeah, both. All
okay.
I love going to them. It's the same for me. Any themed environment that kind of transports you from where you are,
right?
Yeah. I'm gonna enjoy it, even if it's like Grauman's Chinese Theater or something, a really nice hibachi grill. Like I just enjoy that surprise of walking into a place that's not every day.
You know, it's funny that you say that, because I've told people before that obviously the tiki stuff that we enjoy, it's escapism, right? It's transporting you away from the real world. And I'm just like you. I enjoy just about any kind of themed environment. It doesn't have to be tiki, right? It could be anything, you know? And you mentioned like a nice hibachi grill, right? I remember as a kid, it was such a treat to have Chinese food in a building that looked like a pagoda, you know?
Yeah.
You cross over a wooden bridge that had maybe a koi pond inside, and you were just kind of transported to the Far East, right? All the tableware and all of the help staff, everything was themed, so to speak. And it was, I don't even remember if the food was good or bad. I just remember the experience, right?
Yep.
So there's that, and then there's, you name it, right? There's people that are theming things with different visions, right? So,
yep.
And I'm sorry to interrupt you, but, my father was an architect. He was a theme park architect. So,
cool.
What he did was he designed themed buildings and themed environments for places like Magic Mountain and Knott's Berry Farm and all across the country for other theme parks.
Cool.
And it was a neat thing to grow up and see all of those drawings.
Yeah.
And people just don't do that anymore. You know, you just don't see it the way that, at least out here. I don't know what it's like out where you are.
I mean, I think the tools have changed, but that drive to create and facade and theme are still pretty universal. It's actually funny you mentioned designing theme parks. Like I originally wanted to go and be an architect, and when I found I didn't have the math for being an architect, I wanted to be an engineer and design animatronics for theme parks.
And
it turns out that that's not really something you go to engineering school for.
Oh yeah.
I mean roller coasters, sure, but a Bigfoot animatronic, not so much.
Isn't that like mechanical engineering, or is that something else?
I mean, it was way overkill. Because I moved to Atlanta, Georgia, to go to Georgia Tech to be a computer engineer.
Mm-hmm.
And my desire was to build monsters, and that is not. It's way more theoretical than that. It's way more math and programming based than that.
Okay.
So.
So you've always had that in your head, then, that whole horror genre.
Yeah. There's been a lot of that. You know, I read a lot. I read a lot of horror literature. And sort of a lot of my tiki mugs are sort of a mashup of tropes of tiki mugs with tropes of horror literature.
Right.
So, you know, like if you look through all the mugs I've done, I've got a fog cutter mug. I've got a barrel mug. I've got even a Fu Manchu mug, sort of. And it's, they're sort of archetypes of tiki mugs explaining, different horror stories.
So how did you go from horror to tiki and mash those together?
Well, like I said, I collected horror props, like haunt props and things,
right.
Signatures, autographs, and there was a, unrelated to that, as a kid, my mom was a travel agent, so we traveled to the Caribbean a lot, right?
Okay.
So I had a lot of love for kind of islands and boats and themed environments in that sort of way.
Right, tropical lifestyle.
Yeah. But it wasn't quite tiki yet. But I went to a prop warehouse that was closing in Atlanta around about 2004.
Okay.
And while we were there, my fiance bought me a little Tiki Lilani mug for 10 cents. It had a crack. It's my favorite tiki mug. But she bought it for me to commemorate one of our first dates, which was at a Trader Vic's Atlanta Tiki Torch night.
Okay.
So I had this collection of memorabilia from when I was a kid, a lot of barware, and this tiki mug stuff, all in kind of the same space.
Right.
And so, I mean, you know, once you have a collection of anything, like with my stepmother, it's monkeys, right? Like, she got two monkey paintings she liked, and all of a sudden everybody's giving her monkeys right. For every holiday ever.
Right.
So once there was enough of it, it sort of took on this life of its own, and I got a lot of Party City tiki stuff as presents from people.
Right.
And sort of in making sense of all the stuff that I had, I started researching it more. And I really kind of fell in love with, you know, the idea that every mug is a brand extension of whatever place it's from and has, like, a signature drink. And that place has a signature bartender that might be famous and he went over here. And,
right.
You know, like, once you start pulling the threads, you get this tapestry that's kind of fascinating.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. You know, what's crazy is when Tiki Central first started and people started putting this whole jigsaw puzzle together of the history, right? All of the different places and all the different bartenders and all of the different carvers and things like that. It is really very rich in history and how much everything is intertwined. So like you said, that thread, that tapestry is like such a great description.
Yeah. And that's Tiki Central is really what kicked it into high gear for me.
Mm-hmm.
Because once we had, you know, so you know, three data points is a line, right? So once I had this background and I had the awesome date at Trader Vic's with Allison and she gave me the tiki mug, when we got married, we were like, oh, well, we're both into tiki stuff. Let's have a tiki wedding. And so we were looking at to see other, you know, looking at Tiki Central to learn things we could do on a budget, because, you know, who's not on a budget when they're trying to put together a wedding?
Right.
And, you know, we found Tiki Farms, so we decided that instead of giving people bride and groom's gifts that are engraved and dumb, because at that point I'd already been in, like, a dozen weddings, and I had, like, The coolest thing I ever got was an engraved stapler and a copy of the movie Office Space.
Ah.
So I've got a red swing line stapler with my name engraved on it.
You know, a little bit of trivia. When that movie first came out,
yep.
People were reaching out to the company. Was it Swingline?
Yeah.
So they were reaching out to Swingline asking for where they can find the red staplers because
sure.
They wanted one, right? So Swingline actually had to start manufacturing red staplers because of that movie.
That is funny.
Yeah, you know, what's interesting is that I guess they painted it red for the movie.
Did they really?
Well, I think I got this bit of trivia on IMDb because the red stapler was not being made at the time the movie was released. And Swingline had to address that, you know, because everybody wanted one.
Sure.
So,
I mean, that to me is another part of what I just love is, and all of my mugs kind of reflect that too, is the in-universe prop.
Mm-hmm.
I love like when they put the statue of RoboCop up in Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
I love that kind of thing, like where the right. lines between fiction and reality blur.
Right, right.
You know, and you can drink your can of Brondo or your, you know, have your red swing line stapler from Office Space.
You know, this kind of reminds me of, you remember the Rocky movies?
Sure.
And there was one, I don't know if it was, I think it was Rocky III, where he had gotten to the point where there was this statue made of him, this bronze statue, right? It was at the top of the stairs where...
Sure.
I think that's the museum in Philadelphia. I could be wrong about the building, but...
Yeah, I'm not sure what the building is either.
So it was made for the movie, and at the end of the movie, they tried to donate that statue to the Philadelphia Art Museum. And the art museum wouldn't take it because they said, oh, that's just a movie prop. And the artist said, well, no, it's a piece of art. I sculpted this, you know. And then there was this debate that actually started. Where's the line, right? When does a movie prop stop becoming a piece of art and vice versa, right? So when you talk about RoboCop, right, it makes me think about that kind of stuff, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I don't know, I just had off on a tangent there, so.
No, it's a great tangent, though. I love that. Like, I love exploring, like, what is reality? Like, you know, sometimes people talk about, you know, which mugs are tiki mugs and which aren't, and, you know, I don't really have that much opinion on that, but all of my mugs are used in tiki bars. Like, actual, like, you can go to, you know, such and such bar and order such and such drink, and it will come in one of my mugs.
So it's funny that you mentioned that because Devil's Reef, they've got a photo right now on Instagram that's got all like four of your mugs all in one photo.
Yep, yep. Yeah, Jason and I became fans through actually through horror-themed fezzes a bunch of years ago.
Oh, that's interesting.
And he's become a big... Fezzorama fezzes, like we... We both collect them.
So let me ask you, what's your opinion on, like, universal monsters, right? Like Frankenstein and Dracula and Wolfman.
I mean...
It's different from the stuff that you're doing.
Sure. I adore them. All of my stuff, like, I look for the places where horror and tiki overlap... Mm-hmm. Without having to be forced.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, like, for that, there's a lot of like study and looking into it to figure out which harebrained ideas that I have that I want to chase down, and I look for the ones that fit really well.
Okay.
So, like, a Creature from the Black Lagoon would be an awesome tiki mug.
Mm-hmm.
And there are, in fact, several awesome Creature from the Black Lagoon tiki mugs.
Yeah, yeah.
The way I would approach that might be a little bit different is I would want it to feel like an in-universe artifact more than a caricature of the creature, if you know what I mean.
Okay.
So, like, I don't know, it's probably a little nebbishy to get down into it. Like, I would love to see a creature from the Black Lagoon mug that was based on, I don't know, they're like, there's a carving, right? There's an Aboriginal carving that's in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like that, I'd love to see that mug.
Okay.
More so than
the creature itself.
Yeah.
Okay.
Partially because the Universal Monsters have such a rich toy history,
mm-hmm.
that an SD super deformed version of the monster, or a big head version of the monster, or angular version of the monster, like, we've seen probably something like it.
Okay.
In toys that were done in the 50s.
Okay. Yeah.
Which is, it's awesome, but it's a different fandom for me.
That's a great way to explain it, I guess. Yeah. It's a different fandom. I've seen a lot of crossover with those monsters and Tiki. There's a lot of artists that are doing crossover paintings and things like that. So, and it's all really cool to me.
Man, to interject, like, Brad Parker's monster paintings are so gorgeous.
Yeah. I'm gonna assume that you've got a themed space in your house then that's probably crossed over both genres, right? With the horror themed collection and the Tiki stuff.
Oh, very much. Very, very much. I first had a unified space for that about 9 years ago, and it just, you know, keeps... I feel like, except for the stuff that's very beloved that I just can't imagine not being in there, like, it keeps getting better. You know, like, what used to be, like, pages torn out of Fangoria magazine became, like, prints and autographed prints and then limited edition autographed prints, and the frames get better. But I've still got it. I've got all kinds of stuff.
If you have a product, service, or event that you'd like to bring attention to, we can help. This podcast reaches thousands of listeners in over 96 countries every week. Imagine hearing your ad in this spot, just like you're hearing this one right now. Sponsor an episode and get the exposure you deserve. For more information, go to desertoasisroom.com and click on services.
So let's talk about that.
Sure.
Again, it coming from the perspective that you are coming from, right? It's a different motivation because, and it's a different influence because those characters you don't really see anywhere else in the Tiki world. Now, the Cthulhu mug, I've seen it with other artists. I have to be honest with you. Before I saw it in mug form, I didn't know anything about that character. You know?
Sure.
So I thought, okay, what is this? And I did my online, you know, dabbling and hitting Wikipedia and all that kind of stuff, and just to understand that character. And so now I get it, right?
Sure.
But, you know, that character, there's so much detail if you're going to sculpt that character. And then it falls along the same lines with all of the other mugs that you have. So I got your Amontillado mug.
Mm-hmm.
It was a couple of years ago, I guess, when it first came out.
Yeah.
It was so different than all the other barrel mugs that are out there because of all the detail. Tell me more about that. Is that a character or?
Well, so it's a Edgar Allan Poe story, the Cask of Amontillado.
Okay, I'm not familiar with that, so.
Oh, you should definitely read it. It's one of the stories that introduced the character of the unreliable narrator. So it's told from the perspective of this guy who is getting revenge on another guy by luring him into the cellar with the promise of a very high-end wine, which is an Amontillado sherry.
Okay.
But as he talks, as the story progresses, you kind of start to wonder, like, is this other guy a bad guy? You know? And then it's got a twist ending, and it's Edgar Allan Poe. You know, it's wonderful.
Oh, that sounds interesting. So I should read that. And I guess what I'm getting at is that just the sculpt alone was enough for me to say, wow, that's cool. I got to get that. Then you add the story behind it. Now it actually makes it more interesting, right? Because it's, and I get it now. I get, like, why you're why you're theming your mugs this way, because this is all like you're pulling them out of these stories then.
Yeah. And like one of the things about the Cask of Amontillado is, you know, if you look at it, there are superfluous details and you can't necessarily figure them out unless you know, and I didn't find this out until I was researching the mug, that Edgar Allan Poe was a fan of cryptography.
Oh, okay.
So there's cryptography hidden in the structure of the mug.
Wow.
Wow. And that's, you know.
And you're designing these, right?
Yeah, I sketch them out and do turnarounds of them, and I work with different manufacturers to sculpt them because I'm not a sculptor per se.
Okay.
Like, I do large construction build kind of stuff, you know?
Right, right.
But, like, the Cthulhu mug, I worked with a sculptor named Christina Francis.
Okay.
Yeah, she does lots of nice work. But I've worked with both Tiki Farm and Monk Tiki.
Okay.
I enjoy working with all of those guys.
What was the motivation to get into the mug making? I mean, this sounds like it's something that's different from what you normally do.
My daughter was born. We had a new house. I had my space that was full of horror stuff and Tiki stuff. And I was working a different shift than the rest of my family. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't getting home until like 8:45 at night, and everybody was like, hi, I love you, let's eat something real fast and then go into bed.
Right.
And so I watched a lot of movies, I read a lot of books, and I started, you know, like doing all, trying to figure out all the pieces that I collected, what they would look like for my bar, right? So I'm like, okay, I got all this horror stuff, I got all this Tiki stuff. Where do those intersect? Well, I knew that Cthulhu was asleep somewhere in the Pacific Ocean. So I was like, all right, well, where is that? So I did some research. It turns out Lovecraft actually said where that was, which is near, it's the sunken city of Relay, near the oceanic point of inaccessibility.
Okay.
So if you look up what that is, there are two of them. It is the furthest point from land on the globe.
Okay.
So that gave me a point for where Relay must be. So I was like, all right, well, if I was a cartographer, I want to see a map that shows, like, because I love the old the maps. I collect Witco also. I love the maps that show all the islands.
Yes.
You know, in the different areas of Oceania.
Yeah.
So I was like, all right, you know, if I'm going to design one of these, where is Relay in relation to Easter Island? Where is it in relation to Hawaii and, you know, the Marquesas and the Caroline Islands and all that stuff? So I did a map.
So that wasn't documented before. That was, you actually went and researched this, but there was actually, no one's actually said it would probably exist here.
I mean, I'd never seen it. All the pieces were there. I mean, it was all information that, you know, Lovecraft spoke about Relay being near the point of inaccessibility, and yeah, that's why I found out there were two, and it changes depending on which map projection you use. So I tried to figure out where it would be, just mostly for fun.
Now I'm dying to know.
I actually sell a map.
Oh, you do? Okay.
I sell the map that I designed. That kind of became a hallmark. All of my maps have a location.
And that's the other thing that's kind of cool, because you have all of these things that match your mugs, right? Not just maps, but you have cards and and shirts and other things.
And coasters and swizzle sticks. And
coasters usually and swizzle sticks. And for the new mug, you actually even have a role-playing game.
Yeah, yeah. And that was another teenage fandom. I read a lot of role-playing supplements. I didn't actually play a lot of role-playing games, although I did. I played a couple. But I loved the source books, because you could get them and read through the maps and read through the story hooks and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Shadowrun was a particular favorite. Did you ever play Dungeons & Dragons,
no,
Shadowrun, any of that stuff?
No, I'm not familiar with any of that, to be honest with you.
Okay. Basically, any role-playing game, you can usually plot on a continuum that's high technology, high magic, low magic, and low technology.
Okay.
You figure out where in that grid you want to play, and it'll suggest games for you.
Oh, okay.
So Shadow runs a high technology, high game, or high magic, high technology, near future game. But one of the things that they did is all of their source materials were written in an in-universe style, as if they were conversations between hackers.
Okay.
I don't know. I like that idea that we could give you a book of rules for how to play the game, or we could let you guess at the rules by having a conversation between two people talking about the dragon that just moved in down the hall.
Right.
Or whatever.
Right.
there's a friend of mine who writes role-playing games and runs live-action role-playing games. And he and I would just talk about some of the world-building and backstories behind the mugs. And we actually came up with a scenario for the Innsmouth Fogcutter mug that we never wrote down. We always said we were going to write it down, but we didn't. And so when I started working on this mug, which is the Pallid Mask, he was like, "All right, well, let's actually write this down this time." And he's done most of the writing, and we, consulting with me to keep it in the overarching world that's sort of been created between all of my mugs, because there are sort of characters that pop up here or there.
So you didn't write for the last mug, you're saying. Have you considered
Correct.
Going back and adding that later on as a supplement to that whole set that you have?
I mean, if it goes well, so far the playtest is being well received. So if it becomes a thing that people want to do, I mean, like, I started out designing or laying out magazines.
Mm-hmm.
So laying out a role-playing supplement is very much within my wheelhouse. So if people want to see it, then, we're at least going to do this one and then see how it does,
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So this Kickstarter.
Yeah.
How is it going so far? It looks like you hit your goal early on.
Yes, yes.
That's awesome. Congratulations.
Thank you very much. We funded in 17 hours. We hit hit the goal.
Wow, that's amazing. That's pretty cool. And this whole Kickstarter thing that you do, I don't know a lot of other mug makers that are doing that.
Not too many. Crazy Al did his gorgeous big sea serpent as a Kickstarter.
Yeah.
There was a video game that had a tiki mug that was one of the rewards that was really fun.
Okay.
There's been, it's a lot of work. Kickstarters are a lot of work. So, I don't want any of your listeners to think that's like super simple to do.
Well,
but it's, it's rewarding in its own way, in its own hair pulling, stressful way.
Yeah. I can imagine. I'll tell you, I remember the first Kickstarter that you did.
Okay.
And I was impressed just by the campaign itself. Like how complete it was, right? You already had a prototype, you had a video, you had all kinds of stuff going on. And I thought, wow, these guys really thought this thing out. It was very well prepared.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
It took about 6 months to put it together. Particularly the first time, because I had no idea what I was doing. So it was all like sort of looking at best in class other Kickstarters and kind of figuring out like how that would apply.
Okay.
There was a guy, I forget his name, but he did this gorgeous ceramic coffee pot that was like one of the only ceramic Kickstarters when I did that one, when I was putting that one together.
Mm-hmm.
It was a mid-century modern kind of espresso pot. That's the world of Kickstarter is always changing, so you always want to go look and see what people are doing now,
right. And all of your Kickstarters have been successful, right? Every single one of them is funded.
That is correct.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Wow,
that is correct.
That you're batting 100.
Well, here's hoping. You know, you know what's funny is they virtually never pay for themselves immediately. Like I usually end up like just because you look at the dollar amount and you go, oh my god, they guys, you know,
yeah, I
got
know.
All this dough, and it's usually all of the initial money is spent to produce the Kickstarter. And then there's, you know, some mugs left to sell afterwards.
Right. Well, you know, the thing is that, and it's just like the podcast, right? When I have my sponsorships, like, you know, like, again, thank you, because every dollar helps, right?
Sure.
People think that, wow, you're getting paid to drink and go out and have fun. And it's like, you know what? It's... I'm barely scraping by with what the sponsorships are bringing in because
sure.
I'm working so hard. It's if I do the math, I'm making less than minimum wage doing what I'm doing.
Sure.
You know, I did a calculation on what it costs to produce every episode, and you would sure. be surprised. It's probably close to about $300. And
that doesn't shock me at all.
See, thank you for saying that, because a lot of people are like, where is that money? You know, like, why would it be $300 to do an episode? You just turn the mics on and then record. Well, that's what it sounds like.
Right? Yeah, yeah.
But there's, you know, if I got to commute somewhere, I've got to pay for gas. And then if we're making drinks, you know, and if we're doing them at the Desert Oasis Room, I've got to stock up the bar to make those drinks. We have to buy food.
Yep.
We have to, and then there's production time, right? So,
sure.
I mean... if you think about all the hours that it takes to record, commute, edit, all that stuff, I mean, it all adds up, you know, so.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, things sound like easy money until you start doing them and realize that they are, in fact, like, an easy way to spend all your time.
Yeah, you're like, holy moly, man. I mean, like, all the money's gone. But you know, like, I use the words passion project, which that's the sense that I get with you making your mugs, you know, looking at the detail and everything that you do over there at Horror and Clay, from not just the sculpt but the creative process, you know, behind the whole the package that you're putting together for your consumer.
Sure.
Yeah, I can see the passion. So that's what
Thank
it
you.
Is, you know. You
Yep.
Right? So
I think of them as sort of clothing collections, you know, like it's usually like a mug and then another big thing and then little fun, intricate tied-in stuff.
Right, right.
And some of them, because I also want to learn, you know, and usually it's whatever the other thing that's part of the collection. That's what I'm really learning. Like, so for the pallid mask, one of the other things we're doing is rotocast... jade tile, you know, the Chinese architectural tiles, the garden wall.
Yeah, I saw the photos.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
So yeah, my buddy Bones is a and it's actually his name is Andrew Bones, is a special effects artist and mold maker, shop foreman, and so I was like, well, can you teach me to do that? Like, I want to mold stuff,
right?
So you know, he's a most nights right now are I'm learning about the magical powers of smooth on and mold release agents and epoxies and resins and things.
Fun.
you know, it's
well, it's the thing is that it's a process.
Yeah.
And yeah, I say that sarcastically, right, when I say fun, but I bet it is.
But it kind of is.
Yeah, I mean, like, I'd want to learn that, right? I mean.
Sure.
Yeah, yeah. I could see that becoming a hobby. And then you've actually taken it to the next level. You're doing the Kickstarter, and you're also doing these mug crate subscriptions.
Yeah, yeah.
So tell me about that.
So that is actually my wife, Allison, because so as you can imagine, like as we've done more mugs, like we ship more stuff. You know, like my garage is a ship station more than anything else. And so if you've got a room that's set up to put things in boxes and mail them out in as efficient a manner as you can.
Right.
And you've got a husband that collects whatever the hot new mug is, right? Like, I'm sitting here looking at one of the Devil's Reef mugs, actually, that Rob Hawes did on my mantle here. Once you've got all that, it's like, well, okay, so we know what the hot new things coming out are, and we know what I know what he likes to have. So she wanted her own thing. So she started going like, hey, would this go good in a box? Let me put together, because, you know, subscription boxes kind of took off. And there were so many people getting into Tiki, but not really knowing what they were into.
Okay.
And so Allison, like, makes a point of trying to track down artists that are lesser known or new.
Right.
Or that have a new thing, or and then assembles against a price point. So, like, okay, if you're just getting into Tiki, like, here's a box with a you know, I mean, they're not higher price point mugs, but here's a mug from Monk Tiki or from Tiki Farm or from
so she's
Bespoke
essentially
Barware.
She's curating a starting point,
kind of, yeah. And okay. We put in a little card that explains who the artists are. We've got all the artists' websites, and so it's sort of a great jumping off point to go learn more.
Right. And are these boxes all kind of matched? So, inserted items?
No, there's usually a theme that she works against. She works about 5 quarters out.
Okay.
And she'll be like, okay, this is going to be our Palm box, and this is going to be our Seattle box, and this is going to be our New Orleans box, and, you know, like,
right,
goes and tries and figures out what fits. And there's a lot more math to it than you would think, because if you're trying to, you know, bounce in, like, you want people to get the box and be excited about everything, but you got to hit the price point, you got to hit the weight, and you got to hit the size.
Yeah.
And so it's been really exciting watching her grow and develop in that. And she always she comes at it from an entertaining perspective too. So she always makes sure that we've got a recipe and a cocktail.
Oh, cool.
So we have tasting parties at our house where we'll
are they original cocktails then?
Sometimes okay. Not. They're usually variants. Like our friend Lori makes hot buttered rum, but I forget exactly what she changes about them, but they're delicious.
Okay.
We used Lori's hot buttered rum thing for Christmas.
Okay. Sounds awesome.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's fun. It means that, so it's a quarterly box, not a monthly one.
Okay.
And so, like, this month all the mugs come in, and the next month all the, like if there's going to be a cocktail book, then all these boxes of books come in. So, like, right before it's time to pack and send out a box, this whole chunk of our garage is like 2 pallets worth of "Don't go over there."
It sounds like Christmas though in your garage, man.
I mean, it's fun. We've got to, but it's gotten to be fun because artists have started reaching out to us.
Oh,
right?
Cool!
And they'll be like. Robert Jimenez was like, hey, I got these pins coming out based on my Tikilandia stuff. But, you know, like, I ran into him at a convention. And then later he came out. And he's like, hey, I'm doing this thing. You know, that's a size that you guys can ship. Might be fun. And we're like, all right, yeah, let's do that.
So when you're doing these subscription boxes.
Mm-hmm. Mug crate is what we call them.
Okay, mug crates.
Sure.
It's got to be hard to not collect a lot of that stuff, because as a tiki person, right, as somebody who likes to collect cool and fascinating things, all this stuff's being shipped to you every month, right?
Yeah.
It would be hard for me to, like, you know, say, okay, all this stuff has to go into our subscription boxes or mug crates and then sent out, you know. Do you keep, like, one of everything?
I mean, I can pretty much be counted on to keep a mug tax of, like, one.
right.
Because, I collect tiki mugs, so.
Yeah.
And also, you know, she tries to cure to use stuff that she knows I'm gonna like.
Yeah.
So that'd just be mean. Like, hey, you know that mug that you wanted that's new that you said you hey, I got a bunch of them coming in, but you can't have any.
They're not for you.
Not for you.
That's hilarious.
This episode is brought to you in part by Steadfast Pomade. Steadfast Pomade is a strong-holding, medium-bodied, water-based styling product for men and women, which leaves your hair looking slick, neat, and shiny with a clean, fresh scent. Its unique formula allows you to easily restyle your hair throughout the day and washes out with ease. Steadfast Pomade is American-made and veteran-owned. Available in Original and Anchor Hold. Get yours today at steadfastpomade.com. Tame the waves and keep it steadfast. This episode is also sponsored by the Tiki Tea. Founded in 1961, the Tiki Tea is a family-owned and operated tropical drink bar practicing the lost art of exotic cocktail mixing. Come try their house specialty, the Ray's Mistake, a delicious concoction of botanic liqueurs, passion fruit, gin, and rum for only $6 on Wednesdays until 9 p.m. The Tiki Tea is located at 4427 Sunset Boulevard in Hollywood, California. For more information, check out their website, tiki-ti.com. The Tiki Tea, Ground Zero for tropical drinks.
You've been in the game 5 years making mugs now.
Yep.
How's that been?
I'm just as surprised as you.
Well, yeah, it is surprising because I remember that first Kickstarter. It didn't feel like it was that long ago.
No, it really, it's been humbling. It's been awesome and humbling and amazing and like, I've had new experiences and met people like tiki people, like people that self-identify as tiki people are mm-hmm. some of the most like chill, like come over to my house, like,
right.
Oh, you're going to be in town? Oh, come on, let's have a drink. Just friendly people. And then Allison and I both love doers. You know, we like people that have that spirit of like, well, I wanted a bar, so I built one.
Yes.
You know, yeah. I wanted a cocktail, so, you know, I wanted to see how they did the flaming cocktails, so I ordered some flash paper to garnish my cocktails.
Right,
with.
Right.
You
right.
know, so just like finding out there's a whole connected world of it, it's the other part of the tapestry of collecting the stuff is how vibrant it is and how they're like, they're the people that are mostly into the cocktails and mostly into the mid-century and mostly into the mugs and mostly into the
Tiki,
the events.
It has so many sub-genres to it. Like you said, there's the cocktail people, and then there's the people that they build or they carve, right? And there's the people that make mugs, and it all fits under that umbrella of tiki.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you first started doing this mug making venture, I mean, just like anything else, like just like with my podcast, I'm using it as an example, what I envisioned is different from the reality. So for you, it's probably the same thing, right? I mean, like, it's probably not what you thought it was going to be. What surprised you about this whole journey?
A couple things. First off, I found out there are way more people. Before I became Tiki People, I was a hardcore comic convention, pop culture convention, art collector, nerd guy. I've gone to Dragon Con and pop culture conventions for 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so finding out the bleed over between, like, if you sort of relax your mind's eye and think about like Gilligan's Island and 50s TV shows and cartoons like SpongeBob and all this, you know, like the American pop culture in general, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. All of them have a tiki reference or a tiki episode or an island episode.
Right.
It's this unifying thread. And you don't see it. It's like a mind's eye thing, and all of a sudden you get hip to tiki, and it's like, ah, there's a moai, and oh, there's, you know, that's, you know, whatever it is, and you see it everywhere, and it's because it's so in tune with people's vacation, relax, exploration, right, and chill kind of vibe in this country. That was surprising to me.
Interesting.
And finding out, kind of finding out just how into it people are and how passionate people are.
Right.
And so many people, it's about one person. Mm-hmm. Like, there's an almost family element to it. If you really, like, ask them, well, why are you into tiki? Eventually, for a lot of people, you're either going to get down to a zeitgeist, like when they were a certain age at a certain place.
Right.
Or you're going to get down to one relative or friend of the family that they remember as sort of larger than life that was way into this stuff.
Wow, that's such an insightful observation. You're right. Wow. And then going back to that whole thing about there was tiki in everything, when you look back at like the Gilligan's Island and all the different television shows that we grew up with, there was always something tiki somewhere, right? Whether it was a Hawaii episode or something. What was interesting to me is something someone brought up one time was back in the 50s and 60s and even 70s, just about every recording artist had at least one Hawaiian record. Everyone did a Hawaiian record. And I never noticed that until that person pointed this out to me. And so when I go thrifting, right, I'll find a Hawaiian record by Andy Williams, and then I'll find one by Pat Boone, and then I'll find one by Lawrence Welk. Like, they all did a Hawaiian record, right?
Man, you know, sorry to interrupt.
No, it's okay.
I got some pals who are musicians, and I cannot remember if this is just mid-century or if it's mid-century and Hawaiian as well. But they have a Colonel Sanders record.
Oh yeah, that,
and I think it's like Colonel Sanders. It's something like a finger licking picnic or something.
Uh-huh.
But it's
I've seen, I think, the cover. They're sitting.
Have you?
Yeah, I think I've seen the cover. They're sitting in the grass or something, and
Yeah. Checkered blanket. And,
yeah.
But I think there's a Hawaiian standard on that record.
Oh, that's funny. Wow.
Don't quote me on it. But but if the Colonel does, steel guitar, then.
There you go. Wow. Interesting. So we're coming up on an hour, and I know that it's getting late where you are. So I want to be respectful of your time.
Thank you.
Before we wrap up, What is the future of horror in clay?
It seems like I come up with mugs and parts of mug collections far faster than I produce them.
Okay.
You know, I do something like a mug. Mug a year, and then a collaboration with somebody or something, like once a year or something about that. And so I'm up through about 20 mugs designed.
Oh, nice.
In my little notebook.
Wow.
And like ancillary collections and whatever. I'd like to see some of those actually come out. The pallid mask is actually the fourth mug I designed. I think it's the ninth one that we're doing.
Okay.
And I keep scribbling in my books, you know, like this would be fun. Oh, and this would be fun.
Right.
and that idea could go with this.
Right, right.
Another thing we just did, you know, so we've got Mug Crate, we've got Horror and Clay. We just did an Atlanta Tiki Home Bar tour this last weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And that was very successful, and it's everybody had a great time, and it was kind of a life changing in that I've never been on a tiki tour.
Okay.
I'm gonna go on my first that I didn't host with TikiCon later this year. But we actually hosted a Tiki Home Bar tour, and that was a lot of fun. And we will probably do that again because just the energy was so good. And a bunch of people came out of the woodwork here in Atlanta that I didn't know before.
You know, my last job, the corporate office was headquartered in Atlanta.
Oh.
Actually, cool. In Lawrenceville. And okay. I was in Atlanta all the time. And every time I went out there, I'd go to Trader Vic's, and I would eat dinner by myself.
Oh.
I mean, if I'd known that there were other tiki people in Atlanta, it would have been cool to hang out. If I'd known you, you know.
Yeah.
I kick myself now, you know. But so when you tell me about this home bar tour,
mm-hmm.
It just kills me. So, but
yeah,
that is what it is. But you're also going to be at TikiCon, right?
Yeah, yeah. If you look up Inuhele, Inuhele, then you can see some of the pictures on social media. Okay. It was a good time.
Okay, cool.
We visited Portland and Seattle for the first time last year and just had an amazing time. And I've got a lot of Lovecraft people up in the Pacific Northwest for whatever reason.
Okay.
And so we wanted to go do a West Coast show, and we're looking at a horror convention. But we decided that TikiCon actually looked like a lot more fun. So we're going to do that, and we decided that we would... it'll be our first West Coast show. It'll be our first Tiki show. And we decided we were going to... we liked what, you know, the vibe, and started talking to the organizers. And we decided we'd go ahead and sponsor the Friday night surf show.
Oh, how cool is that?
So the horror-infused surf and turf show, I think, is what they were calling it.
Wow, and, so it really is horror-infused? Is that part of the theme, or is that your influence?
That's what Greg said they wanted to call it, so...
Oh, so you're like the perfect fit for that, then.
Yeah, I think that he picked the name because we have horror-infused fiendishly tropical bitters.
Mm-hmm.
Because I drink a lot of Dark and Stormies, and a bartender hipped me to making my Dark and Stormies with a dash of bitters. So I was drinking a bunch of cocktail bitters, and got a private label company to do me
some
of my own cocktail bitters.
How cool is that?
And then our history with TikiCon kind of started because Jason... Alexander from Devil's Reef, when he was doing the Iron Tiki Tender tour or competition there, he used horror infused bitters as his secret ingredient. And then he won the first Iron Tiki Tender.
Oh, okay. I think he's judging this year, right?
He is.
Yeah. I want to try to get up there. I haven't been to TikiCon yet. I keep saying that I'm gonna go, but. Last year I almost went.
I mean, it surely does look like a good time.
Cool.
But yeah, they it's been really nice, talking to them and you know, of course their art director is one of my mug heroes is, Van Tiki does their graphics.
Yes. Yeah. Van Tiki's awesome.
Oh.
Yeah, I know. So, you know, when you're talking about learning how to, when you were talking about your jade tiles and
mm-hmm, yeah.
learning how to mold those and all that kind of stuff, Van Tiki, he was a master at making molds. You know, like if you look at his mugs and he posts pictures of the molds are just as beautiful, right?
Yeah.
And I guess at one time that's what he did, right? He was just a mold maker, which is an art in itself.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Van Tiki is absolutely one of my mug heroes.
Yeah, yeah, and he's a super cool guy too.
Yeah, I've talked to him a couple of times. I get that sense.
Yeah, I haven't met him. Well, let's see, I take that back. I've met him in person before, but the longest that we've actually gotten to talk and been in depth with a conversation was when he was on the podcast. So,
sure,
yeah, super cool dude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, pretty much every every artist that I've met through Tiki is just like super fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
Of course we have somewhere to start talking. I mean, you know, it's
right. We've got something in common.
Yep.
Right.
And then there's usually one of the other subgenres that we also have in common, you know? So it's like,
yeah. Yeah.
Talking surf music or, you know.
Yep. Yep.
I'm a big lowbrow Big Daddy Ed Roth fan too, like 50s and 60s Monster Card fan also.
And
so
there's a lot of crossover there.
Yeah.
For sure. Yeah. Well, hey, Jonathan, thank you so much for taking my call and being on the show. And thank you for supporting the show as a sponsor.
Thank you for doing it. Like it's as I said, I drive a lot, so evocative and clever and conversational podcasts to listen to are at a premium. Fun fact: I've actually narrated for a fiction podcast.
Oh, really?
Yep. Yeah.
Okay. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, you know, it's my roommate started a horror fiction podcast, and so when he was starting out, like they pay pro rates now, but when he started out, they didn't have narrators. So he's like, "Hey, man, can you record this?" So I can absolutely empathize with how long it takes to edit out vocalized pauses and hits, clicks and pops and fan noise from your computer. And
thank you. You know, I'm probably more picky than my listener because you know, just like when you make your mugs, right? You probably see every little thing that it just bugs you. You say like, okay, I can't release this like this. We need to fix this.
Sure.
And you want to release a quality product, right? So, I'm more picky about it, I'm sure, than my listeners are. And I'll obsess over little things and I probably spend more time editing than I need to. But hey, sure. You know what? Like I said, we want to release something that we're proud of. So
sure.
But
well, to all your listeners, this is a quality produced podcast, and you should listen to it and throw some bones at it.
Thank
all
you.
That good stuff.
Thank you. That's very nice of you to say. And I appreciate the kind words so much. It means a lot to me.
No worries. Thank you very much.
Thank you. So if people want to see your mugs and all the other things that you're offering, where can they see that?
That would be www.horrorinclay.com.
And you are also on Instagram?
I am, again, as Horror in Clay. And if Twitter is your thing, then that would be @CthulhuMug.
Okay. And for our listeners out there, if you have any questions, comments, or just want to leave a shout-out for Jonathan and the crew over at Horror in Clay, stop by our group page on Facebook and give them a shout-out. Inside the Desert Oasis Room. And if you want to follow along our adventures on the podcast, you can also find us on Instagram @PolynesianPop. Thanks again, Jonathan, and we will talk to you soon.
Sounds great, man.
Cheers.
Cheers.